Hello. I would like to start by thanking my collaborators and co-authors for trusting me in the interpretation of the information that they shared in many ways. And I would like to begin with a bit of a literature background to my talk. We know from the work of Durlach and Dupré, who reviewed over 500 studies done in the community by providers in the community, such as parents, mental health providers, teachers, that when interventions were done well or implemented with fidelity, that outcomes were better. For this talk, the providers are parents, and the intervention that I'm going to be focusing on are comprehensive treatment models. Along with my colleagues, Sam Odom, Brian Boyd, and Kara Hume, we reviewed comprehensive treatment models for individuals with autism spectrum disorders where there was at least one program in the United States. And of the 30 models that we reviewed, many had components that focused on work with families or with parents, and some were focused specifically on interventions or work with families. We also know a bit about how to do implementation well from the work of Dean Fixon and his colleagues. And they've outlined an implementation process in stages. And some of the earlier stages, which they call stage 3 and 4, they talk about the importance of implementing evidence-based practices with fidelity or well, with support from knowledgeable and skilled practitioners to guide the work of the people that are working in the community in context. And then following that, once the practice is done well, then you would think about adapting it or making refinements to the practice in a local context or to the local context. And in their work, they describe that in all ways you would continue to collect data to see what's the effect of any changes. And if you find that the adaptations result in a positive context for the individuals, then you would call that an innovation. However, if you just say, oh, I don't want to do this practice or not do a component of the intervention that has the evidence base, then they would consider that program drift. But is this the same as when we talk about dissemination across cultural contexts or across countries? And for me, for someone that comes from a country that some people might consider imperialist, I would be very concerned about saying, okay, we do this in the United States, so you have to do it the same way in your particular country. And would clearly want to be culturally sensitive to the idea that you would want to do adaptations that make any intervention or any strategies or any program work in the local context. And my thinking was to start the inquiry by asking about adaptations. And this evolved in conversations that I had with Dr. Uzcan Karaslan, who was visiting us as a postdoc from Turkey. And he described for me the work that he did implementing responsive teaching with parents who were living in poverty in Turkey. And he described that for some families, it took 6 months to help the parent go from a more directive style to actually working on the floor and interacting and being face-to-face with the child. And when he described his systematic approach and the time that it took to get this practice comfortable for the families, I said, well, why didn't you just do it on a table? Or why did you take all that time? And he looked at me and said, well, then that wouldn't be responsive teaching, would it? And it's a really key component that they are working with the child at their level, literally. So this got me thinking about what is it about models that gets adopted and what is it about practices and models that get adapted? And I started this inquiry by going to the model developers of these comprehensive treatment models, and there's three that I'm going to talk about today, and asking, what are the essential components? Because typically you have models that describe multiple components, and I wanted to know what were the key or essential components that you would say, if people are not doing this, no matter where it is, then it's not the model. So I started there, and then I interviewed those that are using the model in different countries and asked them how they adapted the essential features, then what aspects of the model did they I mean, how they adopted the central features, what aspect of the model did they adapt, and what were the outcomes for children with autism spectrum disorders. There are four programs I'm going to discuss and describe today. Two of them are based on the model of the Princeton Child Development Institute in New Jersey. One of them is in Gdansk, Poland, and the other is in Istanbul, Turkey. The responsive teaching model that was implemented by Dr. Karaslan in Istanbul, Turkey. And the fourth, the program and third model used PRT in Tijuana, Mexico. So the model developers that I interviewed were Patricia Krantz and Lynn McClanahan, the co-directors of the Princeton Child Development Institute, Gerald Mahoney, who developed the manual on responsive teaching, and Laura Schreibman for pivotal response training. Here were the responses from the model developers. So for the Princeton Child Development Institute, what they said is, what is essential is creating a system of quality control that's linked to fundamentally child progress, and that the whole system has to be related to that outcome, which they collect data on using ongoing data collection methods and graph them in single subject graphs with a baseline and an intervention. And that's how they keep their records of whether or not children are making progress. And this is done by families and in the home, as well as in any center-based component of the program. Staff training is also critical, where the staff are trained to use principles based on behavior analysis, and they're trained to criteria with multiple supervisors. So they have to have two supervisors have inter-rater agreement that they have met the criteria for fidelity of intervention. They also say a fundamental feature is social validity, that the child progress has to be meaningful for the families. And they collect information annually that they call a consumer evaluation to determine if parents are pleased with how their children are progressing and they're pleased with the progress that they're making on collaboratively identified goals. The essential component for responsive teaching was described to me by Gerald Mahoney as being this reciprocal interaction that happens between the parent and the child. It's a back and forth exchange that is done through shared activities. And also there is shared control, so that the parent is actually responding to the child or the child-led activity more so than that the parent is directing that child to do this and to do answer questions. When there is this interaction, there's a match in the parent's style with the child's developmental level, their interests, and their behavioral style. And that it's this interaction that is fundamental. He also said it also is important, but not as key, that the parent use expressive and animated affect and also respond contingently to their child's behavior. When I asked Laura Schreibman about pivotal response training, she talked about that it's important that the child directs the activity, that direct reinforcement is used. So if a child asks for a car, they get the car rather than having an edible reinforcement for following the instruction or responding accurately, that reinforcement of attempts is made, and that there's an interspersal of already mastered tasks during skill acquisition tasks. She also said that for children ages 3 years and older, conditional discrimination is important, especially for those children that have difficulty with simultaneous multiple cues. And then she concluded by saying, certainly providing clear instructional cues and maintaining and getting child attention is essential, but that's essential for any good teaching and doesn't necessarily discriminate PRT. For the programs that I'm going to talk about, one important variable is that all of the program directors and implementers spent between 6 to 12 months with these model developers to learn about the essential features of the program. Now I'd like to talk about each of the programs individually. The first is Anya Bedinska, who is the director of the Institute for Child Development in Gdansk, Poland. I have information from her annual report. They're currently in their seventh year, but the information I have was from the annual report from their sixth year of operation. they're implementing the model for PCDI. When I asked about adopting the model, she responded in this way: we have no cultural barriers to implementing the PCD model in Poland. She described that, as in New Jersey, families sign a yearly contract, and in that contract they agree to daily data collection in the home, and that's a condition of participation if they want their child to be involved in that model in Poland. When I asked about adaptations, she said that the adaptations really were around the laws in Poland that say that education is paid for only starting at age 7, so they had to create a special kindergarten, which is 50% paid by the Department of Education, and the other 50% is paid for by parents. So it gives you an idea of the socioeconomic income of the parents. The children are ages, who attend are ages 2.5 to 8, and they attend the program for 4.5 days for a center-based program, and they also work with the child in the home. She also told me that all staff have a master's degree in special education or in psychology. Here are the outcomes for the PCDI model from their annual report. So they evaluated 112 of 211 programs for 14 of the preschool-age children. And what a program is a targeted skill that was collaboratively arranged between the parent and the staff. This is what we want to work on, and we want to work on this in the home context. So of those 112, 100% were deemed to be individualized, that treatment effects were clear and obvious, and seemed to be appropriate to continue whatever strategies based on a behavior analysis were being used. They also had 97% of those programs that had inter-observer agreement between the staff and the parent, and in order to reach that criteria, there had to be 4 opportunities per targeted skill where that data was collected over the course of the year. 99% of those programs also had generalization probes taken in other contexts to show that the child was generalizing the skill. And here's the results of the consumer evaluation that I described earlier for social validity. It's on a Likert scale of 1 to 7, with 7 being the most strongly agree and most positive score. So you can see that the families here rated the staff very highly in their familiarity with the child and family and the home context, with the staff being cooperative with the family, that the treatment was effective, the staff's communication, there was sufficient amount of communication, and that the staff are pleasant and friendly and nice to deal with when they're interacting with the staff. Second program is also on the PCDI model, and Benjamin Birkin provided this information from their annual report in their 6th year, so they are currently in their 7th year of operation in Istanbul. When I asked him about adopting, he told me a similar thing to the program in Poland, that children are selected only if the parents agree to collect data. And he gave me a specific example that there was one family they were working with, and they had planned several home visits, and every time they went to the family home, nobody was there. So they have asked the child not attend the center-based program anymore because the family was not agreeing to their contract. When I asked about adaptations to the model, they described that meal times for some families in Turkey were not good contexts for social communication development because it's important to focus on nutrition and eating, so they do not use those contexts for those activities. He also said that some families did not like to use activity schedules, which is a component that is used by the Princeton Child Development Institute, because they said they thought that they're associated with more severe disabilities, so they preferred not to use that particular strategy. And finally, that junk food was never used because the parents were very concerned about the nutritional value of any food that was used. And here are the outcomes. They evaluated 46 of 165 programs for 23 children in Istanbul. This was done by the program director and Greg McDuff, who is the current director of the Princeton Child Development Institute. And 100% were deemed to be individualized. 96% had treatment gains, and 100% were deemed to continue. they had a lower inter-observer agreement of 59%, meaning it was more challenging for the staff to take data alongside the parents, but when they did, they had 100% agreement on effectiveness. And the consumer evaluations were also high for the parents' rating of staff and the program in Turkey, with ratings having a mean of between 6 and 7, which are the higher part of the scale. Dr. Uzcan Karaslan's research that I'm going to present is hot off the press. It's in the print issue of the May issue of Topics in Early Childhood Special Education. And he did this, a randomized control trial study of responsive teaching in Turkey. And many of the families that he worked with came to a special ed, came to a clinic where the parents could then receive services, and he worked with them, teaching them through responsive teaching. When I asked him about adopting, he said that it was helpful to describe the pilot research that he had done with Turkish families to say, not only are these strategies effective in the United States, but they are also, I'm finding that they're working well with the families here, and that that was helpful. He also said that typically the style of working on the floor and playing and working through play was a challenge for some families, when a more directive style between parent and child is more common. And he also said that he needed to work with families on accepting a video session, recording with video, because he needed that in order to do some analysis for his doctorate on the interaction and between the mother and the child. As far as adaptations go, he, with a permission from Gerald Mahoney, changed the order in which he introduced different strategies and different topics, starting with what he felt was most fundamental, which is focusing on joint attention, imitation, and empathy, or really getting the parent to interact with their child in that reciprocal manner with the shared control, because that was so fundamental and such, in some cases, a challenge. He wanted to start there. He also divided the recommended one-hour session into smaller components that were easier for families, and he also talked about having different expectations on the enthusiasm or the animation and affect that is talked about in Gerald Mahoney's work to match the cultural norms. And his results, reported in his research, are that all the intervention outcomes were considerably greater for participants in the responsive teaching group compared to a control group. The mother's ratings on their responsiveness and their affect in the responsive teaching group had were 93% for responsiveness and 71% for affect, compared to the control group, which were rated at 20% and 13%. And also for the children, there was an increase, but using the Turkish version of the Denver developmental screening test, 72% of an increase in their skill level compared with 7% in the control group. And finally, talking about the work done in Tijuana by Monica Corrales. She works for a company called Motiva Associates. It's a program that is a service provider that provides their services in Spanish. She's the director of behavioral services. She has her BCBA, which she got through coursework at San Diego State, which is where I got to know her, and she worked at UCSD and in the lab with Laura Shriveman when she was there. When we talked about adopting the context for Motiva Associates that is heavily focused on PRT in Tijuana, she said that what was really helpful is to have a local person deliver the work with the families, that even though she spoke Spanish, she was still from the United States and was not as accepted as someone who actually was from the community, and so she worked with someone very closely that was in Tijuana. She also discussed that it was a bit of a challenge to talk about the naturalistic approach, because it looked to parents who as if they were just playing, and they didn't understand how this was an intervention. So that was part of describing the benefits of this social interaction for the families. In addition, she talked about that some materials had been translated into Spanish, but it was not the terms and words that were used by the families in Mexico, so they had to do further translation for the local community. When we talked about adaptations, she said that the families typically selected somewhat different goals than the families that they were working with in San Diego, for example, and that that was fine, and also that families preferred more informal feedback to written reports. So that was another adaptation. Currently, Motiva Associates is not working with these families, and she said that all the data with the particular families was left with the local provider who was working with them more privately. So she didn't have data to share with me, but she showed me a sample PRT data collection form that they use with families both in Tijuana and in San Diego and in Southern California in general. And you can see that the components of this data collection sheet are in keeping with pivotal response training goals. Some points for discussion. For these four programs, all implementers adopted the key components of the model. They all wanted to use the essential components that were evidence-based with their families in the countries in which they worked. And there were effective outcomes for the children with autism spectrum disorders when parents adopted these key components of the study. But outcomes, if some of these key components get adapted or not used, is not known. All dissemination was done by implementers who were trained by the model developers. So they all spent between 6 and 12 months with the model developers. What happens with distance is not known. And when I say distance, I don't mean geographic distance. I mean distance from the people that have developed the programs and know the essential components extremely well. Three of the four of those key model developers have now retired. So it's not going to really be possible for people to go and spend time with them and have the same kind of outcome. So we need to see now what happens with that kind of distance from the model developers. There were also some common areas of adaptations across cultures for this study. Some of them I've already started to talk about, which is the relationship with food and how food works with the family, the types of foods that's used, what happens at mealtimes, when mealtimes happen. This is very important. And if I were going to create a manual about what are some of the things you might want to consider if you were disseminating internationally, I would be looking at food. The other thing that came up consistently was grandmothers and the influence of grandmothers and the importance of grandmothers in the family context. In Turkey, some families live with the paternal grandparents and the mother-in-law or the grandmother has an important influence. In Mexico, it was more likely the maternal grandmother. But in all cases, grandmothers came up to be a salient and important consideration when working with families outside of the United States. Clearly, there is a need for more research looking at how decisions are made about what gets adopted and whether strategies or comprehensive treatment models are effective in multiple countries and how adaptions work and become innovations when you say, okay, we changed it in this way because it really works for our cultural context, but and we have even better outcomes. So we certainly need more work in this area to guide us into how to implement comprehensive treatment models. And I will now be glad to take one or two questions. I couldn't resist also putting a picture of San Diego, where I'm from.